Good afternoon, everyone. It's very nice to be here in beautiful Cincinnati, Ohio, speaking to the leadership team of Mylacron. I was just getting ready to come on stage about 5 minutes ago, and your program director, Jennifer, said, "We'd like a copy of your talk." And I said, "What copy?" She said, "You're kidding me, right?" Then this look of terror came across her face, and she said, "Really?" I responded by saying, "Yes, really. I haven't written anything down except a few words. I just intend to talk about what you asked me to talk about and talk from my personal and professional experiences." She responded, "Are you going to tell us a story about your personal life?" And I said, "No, not really. I'm not a storyteller. Whatever you want me to be, though, I'll be, since you're paying me." It's a good thing your production manager, Rob Torzen, was there. He said, "Jennifer, don't worry. I've known this guy for 40 years. He's never prepared in the traditional way." Then Rob looked at me and said, "You're talking about leadership, right?" And I responded, "I think so." He had the same look of terror that Jennifer had. I said, "It's all really good, Rob. I've got it covered, I think." It's my opinion we came into this world with a tremendous amount of power. We were given the power to think, the power to create, the power to imagine, to plan, to love, and the power to choose. We choose to succeed or fail. We choose to be a great manager, great leader, great employee, great partner, or a great human being. You show me someone who is successful, and I'll show you someone who's had to overcome some adversity in their lives, because being successful comes with dealing with adversity. My good friend and mentor back in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, Mr. Frank Cooper, told me many years ago, he said, "Nick, when people need love and understanding the most is probably when they deserve it the least." That resonated so well with me and still does to this very day. And I think about it. When you've just had a tremendous setback in your life, you choose your reaction. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to accept it, learn from it, or are you going to wallow in self-pity? Even though I'm here this afternoon talking to you about reaction, I must say, a couple of weeks ago, I failed this test miserably. I remember it well. It was October the 20th, a Friday. I received the news that afternoon that I had a health challenge with my prostate. I refused then, as I do now, to use the C word. It's not good for my psyche. It impedes my emotional focus if I'm going to fight this dreaded disease. The following night, I had a dinner date with a lady I really cared for. I should have called the date off because I was in no frame of mind to host this event, but being the fool that I was, I hosted it anyway. My mind wasn't right. I really don't remember the night. The following day, she told me to get lost. I really couldn't tell her about my health challenge at that time because I hadn't told my three daughters. And I thought, really, they should know first. That was really no excuse, but it's the way it was. I told my daughters on Monday, I called my friend on Tuesday, and I explained to her my mindset of Saturday night. It didn't do any good. It was still take a hike. So some days you're the statue, some days you're the pigeon. Life just flows that way. So why do I tell you this? You see, adversity pervades our daily lives because we go through changes in our lives, whether it be our personal life, our professional life, or our spiritual life. It really doesn't matter. And in business as in life, the philosophy is real simple. It's accepting responsibility, accountability, and commitment to deal with those things that prevent us from doing our very best. And even though I failed that test a couple of weeks ago, I learned from that experience, and I know that I'm better for that failure today. People change. Family status changes. Society changes. Your health changes, your finance changes, your business changes, and all you're going to hear about is the problems that go with change. All you'll hear about is what's wrong. much like you're going to hear about the difficulties in your organization. And the higher you go in the organization, the more problems you will hear about, the less praise you'll receive, and there will be little or no forgiveness for human error. Adversity comes with change, and change and adversity are really do define leadership. Show me a person who doesn't want to go and do something, and I'll show you a person who goes through life day by day expecting the worst and usually getting it. You show me a person with hopes, with dreams, with aspirations and ambition, I'll show you a person that's positive and that good things will eventually happen for them. So you're probably sitting there wondering, what does this guy have in common with me? I'm a business person. I'm an organizational leader. He's a storyteller, a softball coach, management consultant, mediator, and some type of people studier. I know you know I'm a people studier because you probably read it in my bio under emotional intelligence and neuro-linguistic programming. Well, I'll tell you one thing we all have in common. We all have constant problems. I'd like to stand here and tell you a little bit about my problems, but it would bore you to death and you wouldn't be interested in them. But one thing I can tell you, problems are universal, not always deserved and come unexpectedly, but they are universal. You are going to experience problems in your business life as well as in your personal lives. And it isn't so much as to what the problems we encounter are. It's how we choose to react to those problems. How do we deal with these problems? You see, we choose our reaction. We choose to be happy or sad. We choose to be glad or angry. We choose to act or procrastinate, to believe or to doubt, to help or ignore. Then why doesn't everybody choose to succeed? After all, it sounds fairly simple. Well, the answer is just as simple. As my mentor and friend back in St. Catharines once said, people get discouraged when they experience a little bit of adversity. You show me a successful person, and I'll show you somebody who's had to overcome adversity. We sometimes say, man, oh man, isn't he or she lucky? They got it going on. Everything fell into place for them. I wish I could be more like them. I'd have the world by the tail. But you and I both know things don't work that way. You look back on the people who have influenced your lives as a leader. Look back on their lives and you'll see all of them, absolutely all of them, have had to deal with adversity. You see, the basic philosophy of any successful business today is helping people get what they want. And once you have determined what it is, what they want, you have to show them that you can deliver it quicker, better, and provide value better than anyone else. Needs change. People change. Back in 1980, Tom Peters wrote a book entitled In Search of Excellence. And he referred to many companies as being on the cutting edge of success. We take a look at those top 50 North American companies today. And when we do, we find that several are no longer in the top 50. Some are no longer even in business. Why? Because when people's needs changed, they didn't change to meet those needs. We all have been on the top. And we all have been in the bottom. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not afraid to tell you, you'll be in both places again. Life just rolls that way. It's the statue and the pigeon scenario all over again. You and I will have three crises in our lives over the next 12 months. A crisis will make us stronger if you deal with it better than I dealt with it back on October the 21st. I'm in a much better mental position to deal with it now than what I was back then, but nonetheless, I could have dealt with it much better. Dealing with a crisis will make you better, and it will make your organization better if you respond positively to it. As my dad always used to tell me, Nick, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. Growth and benefit from a crisis is just another way of measuring the greatness of a person. You show me anyone who has done anything, and I'll show you somebody who's had to overcome adversity in his or her lives. In 1995, I had already had my consulting company going 6 years prior. Llewellyn Smith, the president of E.D. Smith's, offered me a great job. It was the director of human resources and organizational development. I had been offered the job previously, but refused it because I felt it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. It was a terrific job. Great salary, lots of vacation time, great company cars, pick of the litter, benefits, and the opportunity to influence the direction of the company. Most people would have killed for this opportunity. I eventually took the job and went to work, not totally committed. And it's a terrible way to go through life. Get up every morning, have to make a decision to go to work. Do I want to go? Do I don't want to go? I quickly learned that attitude does not start at the top of an organization, nor does it begin at the bottom of the organization. It starts with you and me. Attitude is responsible for everything that happens in our organization. You and I set the tempo for everything that happens in our company, and we do that by focusing on our strengths. People, don't focus on your weaknesses. Don't focus on your shortcomings. Focus on the successes and your strengths. If we firmly believe that we are special, we can do great things with our lives. That's what leaders do. I also learned that some people who are chronic complainers, people who constantly predict doom and gloom, people who whine all the time that things aren't right, these people have a poor self-image. These people have no belief in themselves, they are poor communicators, and they have little or no belief in others. A team that wins is a team that plays together. People understanding each other, they work together. Your business is much the same. It's not a bunch of individuals. It's many people helping people get what they need. And you as leaders are entrusted with your client's successes as much as you are entrusted with your employee's successes and your personal successes. We cannot be interested in looking back or where we've been. We ought to be interested in looking at where we're going. That's why I firmly believe that God put eyes in the front of our head. I'm here today talking to you because of four things. One, I have a tendency to be very goal-oriented. Secondly, I think I'm a good communicator, although some people would question that. Third, I have failed several times, and each time I have learned from those failures. And fourth, I have a great group of friends, friends who push me to the best that I can be. When I graduated from college with my degree, I had $103 in my pocket and a part-time job. Had a pair of Converse running shoes, couple of blue jeans, couple of tops. And I had goals. I had big goals. My Aunt Mary bought me a book for Christmas. It was called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. He said, if you're bored with life, if you don't have a burning desire to go out and do something to make a difference, to make your life better, to make other people's lives better, chances are you don't have any goals. Hill said, get out a piece of paper and a pencil and make a list of all those things that you wanted to do. So I made a big list. It was huge. And I shared it with my dad. And he looked at me and said, Nick, why don't you add one more thing to that list? I said, what? He said, get a full-time job. So I went to E.D. Smith's. I worked as an industrial engineer, worked as a receiving supervisor, logistics manager, production manager, general manager, human resources manager and director, human resources director in one of organizational development. All the people that I replaced were terminated by their boss. I never inherited a department or a business unit with a winning attitude. People I inherited were so beaten up emotionally that I thought, wow, this is crazy. Working here is like working in a zoo. However, we never fail to produce bottom line results. And back then, our bottom line results were measured by something called NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. The same is true in ladies' softball. 5 provincial championships, 2 national titles in 6 years. Before that time, we were a mediocre team with a mediocre record. Some people refer to us as an also-ran team. I wasn't a great manager. I wasn't a great softball coach. And most, if not all, my friends will tell you, I'm not a very intelligent person. I just get people to believe in themselves. Because when you get people to believe in themselves, they set bigger goals. Things just don't happen. People make it happen with high goals because they aim high. I remember back in 1965 at St. Anne's Elementary School in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I was graduating from grade 8. That'll tell you how old I am. There was this parent-teacher interview, and they did do these parent-teacher interviews in the afternoon. And my grade 8 teacher, God rest her soul, Dorothy Martin, she says to my mom, she said, you know, she said, Nick's going to pass because we want him out of the school, but he's not going to succeed in life. He thinks school's a place of continual play. He's not that smart. Let me give you a word of advice, Mrs. Policy. Here's what you want to do. You want to let him go to high school for 2 years and be a barber. A barber's an honorable job, she said. And my mom's buying this hook, line, and sinker. And Miss Martin says to her, I know this is tough, but it's better for him to do that than embarrass the family. Your family name will last you forever. So on the way home, we're walking home, and my mom says, so what do you think about being a barber? Well, I can't tell you what I said to my mom, because you'd throw me off the stage, but it wasn't nice. I said, you know what, Mom? I don't like school, but I don't like punching the clock working for a man neither. I'm going to go to school, and I'm going to graduate from a university, and I'm going to have a degree, a good degree. And she looked at me, she said, well, you heard the teacher said, you can't get out of high school. Grade 10's the best you can do. Well, guess what? I graduated from university. I got my engineering degree. I show up at St. Anne's Elementary School. By this time, Miss Martin's probably in her last year, and I said, this is my degree. I made it. She looked me straight in the eye, and she said, you cheated. I said, no, I actually passed. I actually worked at it. She goes, somebody wrote your exam for you. I can't tell you what I said to her. It wouldn't be very nice. But I learned something that day. I just didn't know I learned it until 20 years later. This is what I learned. No one will make me feel inferior or unhappy without my permission. I used to think like most people. Looks, nice clothes, nice car, intelligence, lots of swag had everything to do with a positive self-image. It's got nothing to do with a positive self-image. You have to be positive and optimistic and believe in yourself, regardless of what others think of you or feel about you. That hit home the morning of October 22nd. I have 3 simple rules that I live by at every job I've ever done, in the way I've coached softball, and the manner in which I've participated in raising my 3 girls, and what I hope to leave my children and my grandchildren with. They are 3 simple rules that raise the self-image of people. And as I tell young managers in business today, you're not in the profit-making business. You're in the self-image-building business. These 3 rules, I'm almost so embarrassed to tell you about them, but I'm going to tell you anyway. They are, rule number 1, do what's right. Number 2, do your job. Number 3, treat others as they expect to be treated. Do what's right. It is right to be honest with yourself and with others. You must be honest. You must be honest with yourself and your fellow employees. If you're going to have a team of employees working together, united in the same true sacrifice, helping each other to attain personal and corporate goals, or being successful in a personal relationship, you must be honest. Any time that you don't treat people equally, you're being dishonest. Dishonest with yourself, dishonest with your people. A strong organization, much like a personal relationship, is based on honor. And it's you can't afford to be dishonest with each other or your clients or your partners. To treat people equally, you have to treat them differently because they are. And honesty is the foundation of integrity. If you say you're going to do it, then do it. Leave no doubt in the other party's mind. Anytime you're in doubt, ask yourself, is this the right thing to do? If no, don't do it. Remember that people need to know that you care before they care about what you know. Do your job. Not everyone can be a hero. And we don't need everyone to be a hero. We need employees who come to work and do their job. Doing your job means preparing. It means paying attention to details. It means expecting the unexpected. It means working hard at what you do and communicating for success. As a manager and as a ball coach, I never asked my employees or my players if they wanted to win because I knew that they all wanted to win. Everybody wants to win because it makes them feel good. I asked them this. Can you live being second? Can you live with mediocrity? Can you live with losing? Can you live with failure? In 1960, John Kennedy was being considered as the Democratic candidate for the U.S. presidency. Daryl Barber, a reporter for the Washington Post, said to him, "Mr. Kennedy, given the fact that the vice presidency nomination is open and assured for you, why don't you take that instead of running for president?" Kennedy stopped, looked at him. He said, "No, because once you settle for second, when first is available, you'll have a tendency to do it the rest of your life." Ladies and gentlemen, we should never accept anything less than the best that our people are capable of doing. You as leaders should never accept second best, much like you should consider nothing but the very best a person can offer in a relationship. We don't do our children any favors when we allow them to do the bare bones minimum. You can't be a great leader, you can't be a great employee, a great administrator, or a great person if you don't have a strong faith in yourself. If you have little or no faith in yourself, you'll be a poor leader, you'll be a poor communicator, you'll be an emotional wreck because you'll always seek the approval in everything you do from your peers, from your close friends, and from anybody else you want to throw into the equation. The question is, are you willing to pay the price? Are you willing to go the extra mile? Are you wanting to succeed or just want to go through the motions? Are you willing to take the time and the effort to make the environment better, to help your clients and yourself to get what they want? Are you willing to take the time to become involved in the decision-making process, to give your opinions and feedback to the boss? Getting involved in the workplace. Do your job like you're gonna put your name on it. Live your life the same way. As Oliver Wendell Holmes once said, "Your name is very, very valuable. You got it from your father. Maybe it was all he had to give, but it's yours to use and cherish as long as you shall live. You may lose some of what he gave you. It can always be replaced. But a black mark on your name can never be erased. So guard it very closely, because when all is said and done, you'll be glad your name is spotless when you pass it to your daughter or your son. We have to learn to work in an environment of unstructured change, environments whereby we are expected to make decisions and take responsibility for our actions. This means that you're expected to work under pressure because change, decision-making, and taking responsibility is pressure. The third simple basic rule is treat others the way they expect to be treated. Ladies and gentlemen, this third basic rule underscores the value of our personal and professional life. You have absolutely no idea what a little loving and understanding and communication can do for the workplace and for your personal life. A little love and understanding and feeling can change a company completely, not to mention your outlook of the world. Love, feeling, and understanding is a definite cultural shift in the way an organization conducts its business day to day. Take the time to communicate with people. Take the time to communicate with people who matter to you. I call this communicating from the heart. And the heart is an acronym for hear and understand your people. Even if you disagree with your people, don't make them wrong. Acknowledge the uniqueness within your people. Remember to look for your employees' positive intention. And tell your fellow workers the truth with compassion. Remember, you heard this from the short, fat, bald-headed Canadian guy. He told you this. No matter how educated, connected, talented, or rich you are, no matter how cool you are or how cool you think you are, how you treat people will ultimately define you. Your integrity has always been, still is, and always will be everything. Trust me. People have lost their job. They've lost relationships based on the fact that they've mistreated people. Y'all have no idea the impact you can have on other people in your organization by practicing these three basic rules. Because these three rules are the basis for teamwork. It provides us with the focus for success and excellence. It unites people in a common cause. These three basic rules guarantee success in your business, in your team, in your family, and in your personal relationships because they answer three universal questions that people ask. Every child asks this of every parent of every child, every employee of every employer of every employee, partner of every partner. These three universal questions are, can I trust you? Are you committed? And do you care about me? Can I trust you? Your clients and your employees must be able to trust you. They must know that you will give 125% to help them get what they need. And they will judge this by how they get along with each other. You're a team. Or are you just a bunch of people working in the same office? You must have the trust of your employees and your customers. Without it, you don't have a chance at being successful. Are you committed? Are you committed to excellence? People want to be affiliated with the absolute best. You must show value and let people know that you care. If you say something loud enough, long enough, people start to believe it. Sell the team concept, sell value, sell customer service, sell growth and development. Life is a personal battle in everything you do. On every sale that you make, you have won or lost in comparison to your competition. And number three, do you care about me? Do you care about me as a person? Do you care about me for what I am? Or do you care about me for who I am? Big difference between those two questions. Are you going to give me the benefit of the doubt when there is doubt? Are you going to see past some of my shortcomings and focus on my strengths? Are you going to see the good in me, or are you just going to judge me and make a decision? You should expect great leadership and enthusiasm from your employees and from your peers. You should help your people being in a position to support the corporate culture and the long-term goals by showing them how they support the organization and in their quest to be the absolute best they can be. If you help people get what they want, they will get what you want, and that constitutes a successful goal. Remember, what lies behind us and what lies ahead of us is of little importance when compared to what lies within us. I have a tendency to do a great deal of reading. I find it very relaxing, and what most people don't know about me, except some of my closest friends, is that I also like to read poetry. So let me begin my wrap-up by quoting my second favorite poet, a gentleman by the name of Frank Outlaw. Outlaw said, "Watch your thoughts. Your thoughts become your words. Watch your words. They become your actions. Watch your actions. They become your habits. Watch your habits. Your habits become your character. And watch your character. It becomes your destiny." Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave you with this. As one of my instructors, Brené Brown, once said about real leaders, don't puff up, don't shrink down, just stand your sacred ground. Thank you for listening, and have a great afternoon.